Just think about it, 50 years, some freshman is coming to the state library, maybe by then it won't be a state library, but they're going to hear you guys talking about finance. Yeah, this is Darren. Darren Raji is here, saying hi. Yeah. I gave you this handout. We'll try to work through it. The reality is, guys, managing your money is like talking about walking with God. I mean, there's so many facets. There's so many different areas that we can talk about. So we're going to have a shotgun approach. I'm a bird hunter, you know, so I like to shoot quail and dove with my shotgun. That's what we're going to do with this material. We're just going to have blast away, have a big pattern, see what we knock down, and hopefully put you guys on the right track, put you guys in the right frame of mind on how to manage your money wisely. Okay, we'll have some Q&A. I want to hear from you guys. 1 Chronicles 12:32 is a great verse in the Old Testament. If you look that up and read it, you might think this has nothing to do whatsoever with finances. You might be exegetically correct. Okay? It's talking about some friends of David, some mighty men, the sons of Issachar, and said, men who understood the times. I think that principle of understanding the times applies to you and me, the church, believers. I think it is a scouring indictment that the church does not understand finances and managing money wisely. It's an old saying, and I think it's true. Okay, the two worst money managers the American society are doctors and pastors. Isn't that interesting? Okay? Those two professions file bankruptcy than any other profession in the United States. Did you know that? Doctors and pastors. Doctors. Highly educated, right? They cut on people for a living. They see, I mean, you know, that's no big thing. They have millions of dollars coming through their practice on a yearly basis. They can't manage their money. They go bankrupt. And they embezzle, they steal. Pastors. Even at, you know, Godeyville Baptist Church, okay? Maybe 50 people come any given Sunday. They can have tens, even hundreds of thousands of dollars coming through that church every year in general budget. And here's some pastor who can't manage his money to save his life, overseeing the finances of this church, hundreds of thousands of dollars, okay? And it's not just the pastors and the doctors. It's people like you, laymen, men and women in the pew. We do not honor God with our finances. So consequently, we are in bondage. We're trapped. We're under stress. Our marriages are affected. You might think that being in debt only limits you in being able to go overseas or being able to give to a church or to a ministry where God relies on your heart. But I'd go so far to say that if you're in bondage, you're not managing your money wisely, it will affect your personal ministry. Because you know what's going to motivate you? Fear. The only thing you can think about is that debt that is looming over you. It's like that paper that you put off to the night before that's 25 pages. You got to rip it out tonight. You ain't thinking about walking with God. You ain't thinking about evangelism. You ain't thinking about honoring your roommate. The only thing you can think about is getting that darn paper down. Okay? Same way with finances. It's just like this tidal wave that's going to crash down on you. You're not going to be in the right mind. Your heart is not going to be ready. You're not going to be able to share the gospel at work. You're not going to be able to be effective with your roommates, with your spouse, with people that live next door to you in your church. You're not going to be able to have a mind that is free and a heart that is able to serve. Because why? You haven't made your own mind. Guys, really, this can be a cancer that can affect your entire life, work, and ministry if you don't get a handle on it. So let's talk about it. Some quick principles, we'll blast through this. If you've got a question, just stick it up there and we'll talk about it. Number one, big principle, always, always, underline always, 2-3 times, live on less than you make. If you can't get that started right, you will never make it. If you have champagne taste and a beer budget, you know, crazy what you say that to me, then you're just not going to, you know, you're going to always be struggling with debt. You've got to learn to live on less than you make. Okay? That is foundational. Number two is you've got to set some priorities. You've got to have a plan. Again, you know the old saying, if you fail to plan, you what? You plan to fail. And some of you all, and I know you, that's how you approach your finances. It's just this abstract thing out there. It's not even reality to you. It's just a bunch of numbers and receipts and paper. It has no personal impact and bearing in your life. You do not have any kind of thought out biblical plan how to honor God in that area. And here you are, where you're trying to share gospel, make disciples, and study your Bible, and you're like, this is completely separated from that. It's not even in your reality. That's your parents' problem. Or that's something I'll worry about later. Set some priorities. And here's my four priorities. Number one is giving. Okay? We're going to look here in a minute at some scriptures in Matthew. But the idea is that God gave us resources, to be stewards of these resources, so that we can be a blessing to other people. Okay? You manage your money for the sole purpose, number one, of glorifying God. And glorifying God, that a subset is providing for your family, okay? And supporting ministry, right? So, giving the tithe, paying your debts on time, providing for the basic needs of your family, and saving for your future. Those need to be priorities that guide any plan that you make in your finances. Get a handle on your debt. We'll talk about that ad nauseum here in a minute. Number four, be a smart shopper. Some of you guys are the world's worst. Maybe you're living on your own, you're trying to cook, and so you walk in and buy the most expensive brand of ramen noodles you could possibly buy. And everybody knows ramen noodles are just ramen noodles. And you buy packs of 10, you know, for a quarter, you know, 50 on Sunday. I mean, you know that. But you just go out there, and the first thing you see, you're an impulse buyer, you buy it, throw it in the cart, and you leave. Okay, ladies, you're bad about that too. Okay? Maybe it's clothing. You know, maybe it's something else. But you go out and you buy the Polo brand, you know, and that's the way you live. Okay? You know, everything I got on, my shoes, my pants, my belt, and my shirt, I bought at a consignment store. This is all used clothing. Okay? I'm not proud. You know, I'll wear it. This cost me $10. You can't buy a Polo shirt for $10. You can be a smart shopper. Doc Martens, they were brand new. I paid $40 for them. You know, you're not going to pay that kind of money for Doc Martens at Dillard's or in the mall. So you guys can make some decisions, whether it's clothing, food, your entertainment. You can save hundreds, even thousands of dollars every year just by paying a price, being smart, taking some time, and being a smart shopper. Fit, discipline, plan ahead, fellas. There's a lot of surprises in life. Usually in the area of the car, you know, transmission blows, flat tire, your wisdom teeth that they said never came in, you know, they do. And now you're responsible to pay for this stuff, okay? Plan ahead. And most importantly, seek the leadership of Jesus with your finances. I think it is hypocritical, and I see it in our ministry. We talk a lot about honoring God, walking with God, and again, your finances is this kind of lost world, undiscovered country that never even is on the radar screen of your prayer life. I want to challenge you guys to pray. In fact, let's just give you an assignment. For the next week, every dollar you spend, you pray about before you spend it. Some of you are dating, okay? And that means you're going to be praying a lot, okay? But really, because I think we just spend and spend. We don't even think about what we're doing. I want to challenge you. You just pack it down. Give it to the Lord and say, Lord, does this honor you? Lord, is this something I need right now? Lord, I want to honor you with my money. Father, just please continue to lead me and impress upon me to make wise buying decisions. I guess if you start praying over the money you spend, you know what? You won't be spending as much money as you used to. Really? Because that autopilot, which is our flesh, you know, I see a new, you know, Sports Illustrated just staring at me over here in the magazine rack. Okay? I start just kind of gravitating towards it. You know, if I pray, you know, that's a little check in my spirit to say, okay, do I really need this right now? I've got about 15 books I need to be reading for my ministry, for my personal walk with God, my marriage. Do I have time to read this magazine? Nothing wrong with Sports Illustrated. Do I have the money to lock down on it? Okay, I challenge you guys to think about that. Matthew 25, 14 through 30. Familiar verses. If you've grown up in church, I promise you've heard more sermons about this, and you probably should skip that. What's it dealing with here? Anybody? What's the parable of?
Talents.
And let's just call it what it is. A talent was basically a year's wage. Okay, it's a lot of money. Now, I've heard this preached every way, six ways to Sunday, you know, metaphors for this and for that. Okay, well, guess what? He's talking about money, okay? Did you know that two-thirds of the parables of Jesus dealt with money in some form or fashion. You know, the two main things that Jesus talked about was money and hell. Those are two things at church that we don't want to touch. Okay? Jesus talked about money and hell more than anything else. And here, guys, he's talking about money and stewardship with money. Finances. And the principle here, and you all know the story, we won't go through it step by step, but verse 23, one of the slaves was wise, and he invested his money wisely, had a good return, and the master said, "Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." And that ought to be the overriding principle of your finances. Again, that money is not our own. It's God's, okay? We are simply stewards of it. And when we are faithful with the little things, even as a poor college student, when you are faithful with that $10 in your pocket, what does that say to Jesus? What does that say to him? Gary, what does that say?
Jesus is more important than I want to.
That's right. And you honor him with that $10. You hide and watch. He will, by his goodness and his bountiful blessing, he will provide more resources for you to manage because of your faithfulness and your good stewardship. Doesn't mean you're going to be rich, okay? Very few of us might be. But there's a sense where we're a good steward. God entrusts us with more. Okay? And we can enter into the joy and just walk with him in joy because of that faithfulness. Okay? That's some good principles there. All right, let's keep on going. That second page, just an article I thought you might like. Yes, Derek.
All right. This is something you're talking about before. But how do you keep a balance between saving for the future and not tithing, but like offering the future? Just like in terms of, normally put this money in my, how do you balance, how do you keep a good balance of that?
We're going to talk about how to set up a budget. And so I think one of the things you need to look at is this an item that you're saving for that is a necessity, a budgetary item? Because basically your budget you've laid before the Lord as well. Okay? And so you've established this before the Lord. This is something you're working towards. My own heart, I don't think God leads us to contradictory things to how he's already led and spoken to us. So he's spoken to me and said, I want you to set aside this much money every month for your housing. Okay? And then he's going to lay on my heart to spend that money over here. Okay? I'm not saying he doesn't ever do that, but he's not done that with me. Okay? So I think just being consistent. Now, if you're just saving money, just to save money for maybe discretionary income or a surplus, then the Lord lays on your heart to give this to somebody or something, then you need to really look for the Lord and be obedient. There's going to be times where God's going to ask you to give sacrificially. Okay? So I don't want to try to extinguish faith from the equation. But try to stay in line with how the Spirit has led you in the past. No, Neil, I want to defer to you for a second. Have you ever dealt with that? We've been saving money, we thought God is leading you to do this, and then he asks you to go spin it over here this way. How do you balance that?
Well, I think you want to make sure that you're not just operating emotionally. Usually what I do is I take a couple of days and pull back and make sure that the situation is really something God's leading.
Not saying being reckless, and most of you all, that'll never be accused of you, being reckless of being too given, okay? So don't worry about falling into that extreme, okay? If you do, you come and talk to me, I'm sure, but, usually it's the other extreme, isn't it? We got a tight fist around the money that God's entrusted with us. So that next page there, I just wanted to give that to you. I know we're in a mixed crowd here at OU, California. There's different cultures, situations. The bottom line is this. In America, the majority, if there are two parents at home, they both work. It's for the simple fact they want to support a lifestyle that is really above what they need. So mom has to work so we can drive this new Lexus. Okay? Mom has to work so we can have the timeshare in the Barbados or whatever. Okay? You know what happens to Junior and to the little kids and all that? You know where they're raised? In daycare. Okay? I'm telling you what. I'm not one of these guys that say women have to be barefoot and pregnant and all that, but I want to really challenge you. When you're married with your spouse, you talk to me very seriously, and I think you can live on one income well. Okay? That you can raise your children with a mother and a father that's there. Not always working, always out of the picture. Okay? We will give an account to God for the way we've raised our children. some of y'all were raised in daycare, and to this day, you don't have a good relationship with your parents. Okay, there's a distance there. All right? That means that you live in a smaller house, you drive an older car, you gladly and willingly pay that price. Okay, that honors God. Some verses there. The next one, it says finances at the top of the page. I want to talk quickly about debt. Proverbs 22:7. I'm going to look that up very quickly. Proverbs 22:7. Read it when you find it. Good and loud.
The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower becomes the lender's slave.
All right, Gary, what's that saying?
Because it's saying that your debt, if you have your yoke of money, you're slave to more than just the money.
That's right. You're in bondage to the lender. You're enslaved to the lender.
I'll pay your God or something.
Well, the fact of the matter is they pull your strings. As long as you owe them money, you're theirs. And you need to understand something. There's some different schools of thought here. I want to be respectful, but the Bible never explicitly prohibits debt. Now, some people use Romans 13:8 to try to say that there's, you know, debt. All debt is bad. I disagree. I think you can interpret that. Just the idea is that you always pay your debt. You're never delinquent in what you owe. There's no way you can buy a house, particularly in California, but even in Oklahoma, without going into debt, right? You all have $100,000 or $300,000 or $500,000 to plop down on a house. Ray was telling me in the last workshop that a two-bedroom, one-bath house costs about, what, $100,000, $200,000 in Southern California? My two-bedroom, two-bath house in Norman, Oklahoma cost me $78,000. Okay? We can buy a lot more in Oklahoma than you can in Southern California. I understand. Okay, there is some debt that I think is unavoidable. The bottom line is this, though. Understand, all debt in the Scripture is always seen in a negative light. You're not flatly prohibited, but understand there are consequences, there are strings attached when you go into debt. Okay? So just go in with your eyes open. Okay? Some debt, like your education, a home, we call that good debt. Okay? Because basically, those are things that if you get an education, statistically you will make more money with a degree than if you don't have a degree. Right? If you buy a home and go into debt, you pay off that home early. We'll talk about how to do that. You have equity. You have an investment. Okay? That's good debt. Credit cards, bad debt. Consumer debt. A car payment, bad debt. That will only depreciate. And you lose money in the long run. So you've got to differentiate between the two. But all debt is always seen and talked about in the negative light of Scripture. Let's talk about buying for a second. I want to step on your toes, but man, Steve, I need to be straight up with you. Okay? Do not ever buy a brand new car. Okay? I don't care what your parents do. I don't care what your grandparents or your friends do. Don't ever buy a brand new car. Why? Depreciation. What's that?
It loses its value on travel for a while.
How much? You know? Minimum $1,500 on a new car, as high as $5,000 to $7,000 on a brand new car, if you drive off the lot. That's how much he just made off the USCO. Okay? Why pay him that money? You want give that money to me, for Pete's sake. Okay? You want to give it to somebody. There's some BSU staffers around here that would love your support. Right? Same thing. Okay? Buy used. Let somebody else work out the kinks. Break the car in. Alright? Make sure it's good and running. And then you can buy it. Buy a car a year, 2, 5, 10, 15, 20 years old even if you need to. But you can save literally tens of thousands of dollars on buying used vehicles. Never lease. Why is it wrong to lease a car? That's actually worse than buying a new one, believe it or not. Why? It's a lease. You're renting a car. What happens when the lease is up? What do you do with the car? You don't have anything to show for it. You want to rent a car? You can rent mine. I'll charge you half of their, you know. I mean, see, if you want to just give your money, but how many people are out there leasing cars? We see these Lexus ads on TV, like, man, I'm only $399, I can lease a Lexus. Yeah, but you ain't got a Lexus. You don't own it. The dealer does. Okay? never, ever buy a brand new car. Ever. Okay? Because you're financing that. Okay? You go into debt for that. On top of that, besides the fact that it's depreciated its value, but now you're financing it over 5 years, now you're paying 5, 10, whatever percent interest on a brand new car that's depreciating anyway. You save your money, and you buy a car with cash. I'm going to challenge you to do that. Okay? Save your money and buy the car outright. That might mean that you don't have the brand new Chevy Tahoe. Okay? Well, okay. That's fine. But you can buy great, reliable transportation that's used. Okay? Anybody have a thought about that or comment? Man, don't be dumb. Alright? I mean, I know. Some of y'all's parents, my father. You know, everybody has hobbies. You know, woodworking, painting, you know, snowboarding. You know what my father's hobby is? Cars. I'm serious. That's what he does. He buys cars. And I was just home a couple months ago. And he's trying to convince me that I can buy a new car cheaper than a used car. And I can, with his math, if I go to a dealer and finance it over 5 years, you can actually, certain times of the year, buy a new car, finance the dealer cheaper than a used car. But you know what you're still doing? You're financing the car. You're losing hundreds, even thousands of dollars of interest that you're paying to that car dealer. I said, well, Dad, what if I just go out down here and buy a car outright with cash? Well, I never thought about that, son. Okay? Maybe you have parents that are like that. Okay? And you love them, but you know what? You don't have to do what they do. Houses. Guys, golly, this is huge. Okay? Be smart. Don't buy your dream home right away out of college. Okay? Buy smart. And some of y'all, maybe you're years away from buying a house. But one thing you need to think about. Again, never, ever get a 30-year mortgage. Ever. Any possible way, don't get a 30-year mortgage. What's the mortgage? Come on, what's the mortgage? Right. That's your contract with this mortgage company, because you don't have the money to buy this house. So this bank lends you the money, and you sign a contract with them, and your mortgage is how much I'm paying every month to pay off that loan for the house. So they call that a note. And oftentimes they want you to get a 30-year note. So you're going to take 30 years to pay off this house that, let's say, it's $100,000. Let's say you're financing it at 6%. So for over 30 years, you pay off this house. So guess what? The longer the note, the cheaper your payments. But if I just pay off this house in a year, what's my payment? $100,000 in a year. If it's over 30 years, my house payment might only be $400 or $500 a month. You can buy a lot of house. Can't you? If you paid off over 30 years. But what happens with the interest, guys?
6% for 30 years.
Yeah, or 10, or 15. On the average, on a 30-year note, on the average, if you finance a home over 30 years, if it's a $100,000 home, you'll pay $300,000 for that home. It's not fuzzy math when you do it and see. You'll pay two times the value of that house. Over a 30-year note. Do you want to do that? Give me $200,000. I mean, again, maybe you're thinking, well, I don't have that much money to pay every month. Okay, then get a smaller home. Or go back and redo your finances where you can pick up the extra $10 or $20 or $50 a month to get a 20-year note. Okay? Max talks about, this is one of the handouts I borrowed from him, you know, that he had an opportunity with his son who wanted to buy a house and to get a 30-year note. And Max said, figure out what it costs to do it for 20 years. He said, well, it's a difference of $8 a month. They sat down and figured it out. And again, the tens upon tens of thousands of dollars that Rick saved for financing for 20 years, Max said, man, I'll help you with that extra $8 a month to save all those thousands of dollars for your home. Okay? Guys, be smart. Okay? The idea of interest. Let's talk about the payments. You know what an amortization is of a loan? Okay, amortization is basically it's that mortgage, it's that note, and they've got it all printed out over the course of 20 years, every single payment, and then what percentage goes to your principal? Say it's $500 a month. $495 will go to your interest, and $5 will go to your principal. Okay, and over the course of that loan, you know, as you go down 10, 15, now 20 years, now the lion's share of that payment of $500 is going to the principal. and the other small percentage is going towards the loan. What do they want you to do first? They want you to pay the interest first. Why? Yeah. The bank's going to make their money first. Oh yeah, you'll get your house, but they're going to get their money first. So when you finance 30 years, you're paying all of their interest up front. You want to pay off the house quicker? Get a 20-year note, commit, sacrifice, you pay that every month, and then you figure up an extra payment. Oftentimes, they recommend you do a separate check, and it just says principal on it, maybe $50, maybe $100 a month. Now imagine on that amortization, on that note, okay, if, you know, for the first 25 years, out of $500, up to $400 of that money is going towards interest, and the other $100 is going towards principal, okay? On the back part of that note, $400 is going towards principal, $100 is going towards interest. If you make an extra $100 or $50 or $75 payment on principal on the front end of the note, you know where that goes? To the back. Do the math. If you can commit and sacrifice paying an extra $50, $75, $100, whatever you got towards your principal, that will take off an entire payment on the back end of the note. You pay $100 here to save $500 25 years from now, 20 years from now. Okay? You can pay off loans early by paying extra principal. Understand the value of interest. Any questions about that before we move on? You see what I'm saying? It's kind of complicated. But guys, you've got to understand interest. As a matter of fact, we're going to move on here. Keep on turning the page or two here. This is a tried and true handout. The time value of money. Guys, interest can either bite you or bless you. We just talked about how it can bite you in financing a car, financing a home over 30 years. But interest can also bless you. Compound interest. Any accounting or math needs in here? Okay. Can you, in layman's terms, explain compound interest to us?
When you invest money, you get interest, and then that interest gets reinvested and you make money out of the money.
So your corpus, or the overall value, is growing and growing and growing. Because all the money you make goes back into the overall amount.
Exponentially.
So it's not 1 plus 1, is it? Okay, it's 1 times. I mean, it's multiplication. It's good old-fashioned discipleship principle, is what it is. Honestly, compound interest from man to man, you could do a great study about that sometime. It's pretty fun. Because really, that's what it is. It's amazing how you can reach, okay? Well, look at this. This is not an exaggeration. This is a real article, I promise you. There's a great, great investment opportunity called the Roth IRA. I highly recommend, even now, you look into one of these. Praise God for George Bush. He raised up to $3,000 a year that you can put into a Roth IRA. It used to only be $2,000. The minimum is $500 a year. You can give up to $3,000, okay? This is a tax-sheltered investment plan, which means that Adam Coleman, when he pays that $3,000 for 2004 towards the Roth IRA, you pay those taxes now. You tax, you're taxing that $3,000 for 2004. Okay? So now, when you retire at age 65, you don't pay any taxes on that money. And I'll show you how that's important. Look over here. Okay? The greatest commodity you have right now is time. You don't have any money. Okay? Who doesn't in college? But you do have time. And look at the guy here on the far left. He started at age 21, and he put $2,000 into a Roth IRA. He put $2,000 a year from the ages of 21 through 27. And he stopped. At the end of that time, how much money did he give to the Roth IRA? At the bottom of the page? 14 grand. From the ages of 21 to 27, he put in 14 grand. When he retires at age 65, at what is this, 12% interest compounded annually, he has $1.6 million in retirement on a $14,000 investment. Why? He started early. Now look at the guy right next to him. He messed around. He didn't have any money. Whatever reason, he wasn't able to start putting money into a Roth IRA until he was 28 years old. And he put $2,000 in every single year until he turned 65. He put in 76 grand. You know what he retires with at age 65? $1.3 million. You think, well, that's not fair. No, that's compound interest. Okay? Time. Time. Okay, you don't have any money. You got $10 in your pocket, extra $20, $50, $100 a month. You start investing now, guys. You got student loans to pay off? Okay. Listen, I know that some people tell you different things. Some people say pay off all your debts as quickly as possible. But if you do that, you miss out on this time commodity. Okay? Pay your debt. Pay your school debt. But set aside $50, $100 if possible and start putting in these investments. Because when that's compounded over the life, you know, until you turn 65, that is extra hundreds of thousands of dollars for you. If it's a Roth IRA, you don't pay taxes on it when you turn 65. A 401k, you know what a 401k plan is? When you get a job, they put you in this investment plan or they match money. That's a good thing. You need to do that. But the 401k, when you turn 65, you pay taxes on that retirement. And I don't know. Well, I was a history major, but I figure taxes on $1.6 million is a little higher than taxes on $14,000. Anybody else want to agree with me on that? That's what you can do on your 401k. This Roth IRA is tax sheltered. Okay? Do it. You're thinking, well, how? You walk in any bank, okay? You don't have to have a middleman anymore. You don't need Edward Jones or E.F. Hutton or Charles Schwab, okay? You can go into a bank, you can talk to them, get different rates, do some shopping, and maybe start this right away. And when you're married, your spouse can give up to $3,000 a year as well. Imagine $6,000 annually going into a Roth IRA. Can you imagine the power you can have and the freedom to minister and to give and support the Lord's work when you retire? The rub is, you can't pull it out till you're 65. Okay? Man, just imagine the resources, the freedom you have once you retire. Any questions about that? I don't get any money, okay, for selling Roth IRAs. I'm just telling you, this is a phenomenal opportunity.
What happens to that money if something happens?
Okay, that's right. You can bequeath that, will that from your estate. Okay. Yes, I see.
You can't pull it out.
No. Yeah. You can, but then you will pay all the back taxes. Okay, you pay a huge penalty if you pull it out early. There are other investments like CDs, things like that, where you can do a 5-year or 10-year. It's a much smaller rate of return, but you get your money quicker. Okay. I think it's $500 minimum, up to $3,000. You can start right now. And you don't have to give every year to it. Ideally, you want to do that because you keep the money growing. But if you can only do it for a few years, you have to stop for a year or two, just get started. Last thing I want to talk about some budgeting. And again, the big picture. All of this is under the umbrella of stewardship and glorifying God. Okay? We don't manage our money. We're not going to be free to be effective witnesses and disciple makers in the way God has created us to be. Form one, and I'm going to show you the resources I'm getting this from. I recommend a couple others. This is from Larry Burkett. This is a great, great resource. This one is the Bible study. I highly recommend if you can. You might even use bookstores now. Pay full price. Pick this up. And this is just the biblical basis for budgeting, investing, tithing, giving, saving, debt. It's all here. Okay? Guys, if you don't understand biblically what God wants, you'll never be able to do this with excellence. Okay? Pick this up. And then this is the workbook. This has all the sheets that you have there reproduced for you here in the back on how to budget, how to do your all that kind of stuff. And you can feel free to replicate these. Okay? That is legal and okay. But pick up Larry Burkett. Another guy I'm going to jot down his name is Ron Blue. B-L-E-E. Ron Blue. Burkett just passed away recently. Kind of bad news. Ron Blue is another great guy. There's George Boucher, an old friend of Max's. And he's got something called Crown Ministries. It's a tremendous, tremendous organization. They'll come into your church. And guys, they will host a financial planning weekend. They will walk the whole church through how to budget, how to organize, how to invest. You know what? That could be a tremendous outreach opportunity. There are people, lots of people in your neighborhoods who want to learn how to manage their money. Talk to your pastor. Crown Ministries, again, I don't make any money off of this. They would love to come in and help you do your finances right, honor God. It could be a great recruiting tool for people in your community. Okay? All right. Budget. This would be the hardest thing that you ever do. The budget. Kind of like that workout schedule. Kind of like those New Year's resolutions. Then you're all fired up. You do it for a while and then you stop. Okay? Some of you guys have never done a budget. You know what? You can start today. All right? As a matter of fact, that's your second homework assignment. All right? He's not only praying about every dollar he spends the next week, all right? Gary, I know I'm loading up on you. The second one is, I want you to do a budget in the next week. You sit down, you get back home, and you work through and you do a budget. All right? Here's a sample one. Gross income, that's how much you make a month. You might think, I'm a college student, I don't make any money. Okay, I understand that. Still play around with it anyway. Get comfortable, get familiar with it. Do the best you can. Gross income is money you make before taxes. And then less your tithe. Okay, you tithe your gross, not your net. Gross is money before taxes. Net is money after taxes. Okay, you tithe your gross, guys. Alright? Don't get chintzy on that. If you do your taxes right, you get that money back. Alright? Tithe up front. No taxes there. But here's the categories. The reason why this is so good is it helps you think through. Why do you guys set up a budget and think, okay, I need to eat, I got a car I drive, I need somewhere to live. You don't ever think about, you know, I need to get my hair cut. You know, I gotta get a new shirt every now and then. Or, gosh, yeah, I forgot about that whole tuition thing. Okay? This just helps you think through all the other areas that you do budgeting for. If you're single right now, some of these like babysitters might not apply. That's okay. Turn the page. One of the major questions I have when people do budgets, okay, I really want you to sit down and look through this, is what about those hidden or those variable expenses? You know, you blow a head gasket on the car. You get a flat tire. Again, like I'm talking about, your wisdom teeth come in. Maybe when you go on a vacation. That's not a monthly budget item, you know? You don't go on vacations every month. At least you should be. Hopefully you're not getting a new transmission every month. So what you do here is you try to think ahead, try to plan ahead for some of these things. You think, okay, it's going to cost me, you know, X amount of dollars to keep my car running. So you figure out that estimated cost, and you break it down per month. Okay? You can't eat an elephant, Senator Barnett always says, what? One bite at a time. Okay? So you put aside $10 or $20 a month, for the course of a year, you can, you know, get a new radiator, or, you know, get your teeth fixed, or take that vacation you want. But now you're not paying for it up front, all at one time, going into debt on a credit card for it. Figure out that expense, and budget out for months, and save toward it. It gives you a goal, something to work toward. Don't you understand what I'm talking about? So you don't get married soon? Right? Honeymoon? You don't want to show up and whip out a credit card and pay for your honeymoon. Right? I hope. You're saving now, aren't you?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Putting them on the spot now. I know Travis is a good guy. Right, O'Seal? Okay. He's married his sister. Okay. Budget percentage guidelines. I was working through one of our staff members a couple weeks ago with this, and he said, you know, I'm a single guy. I'm raising my support. I don't know how to do my percentages. I mean, I've got this monthly income, but I don't know how to break down how much needs to go where. Okay? That's a great question. Okay, so you got this form 3. Turn that page over. On the back of that is the percentage guide for family income. Now, I know some of y'all, well, I don't have a family of 4. Okay, well, this is just giving you some guidelines, okay? We're between $15,000 and $60,000, okay? Most of you guys live towards the $15,000. Gives you some sample percentages on how to set up your budget. Because, you know, you might be putting... Maybe, I love this, number 8, entertainment, recreation. For college students, that's not 5% of their budget. It's like 55%. See, we don't have any boundaries. We don't have any guidelines. So what he's trying to do is give you some basic percentages on how to break up this money. So see, whether you're making $60,000, you're only making maybe $5,000 a year, use these percentages. So now you go back to this budget page, and you factor in now for entertainment, I got 5% I can spend on my monthly budget. I only make $50 a month. Well, guess what? You're having a lot of free entertainment. Okay? That's how you figure out those percentages for your budget. So, on the other side of that percentage guide, this is how you figure out those percents. So let's say you make $2,000 a month. Okay, let's just use that. That's your gross income. And then you can figure out the 10% tithe. You can figure out probably 17.5% tax. And you can figure what that looks like per month. Then you can go down all of these categories and figure out, based on that chart, your percentages, and then how much that monthly amount needs to be. Then you can transfer that over to that budget sheet and break it down from there. Understand?
Oh, so this is kind of like a form to give you, like, when you first start out or doing a budget until you get a stable
income. Right. And even when you have stable income, you need to know what are some, these are sound tips on how to break that money up every month. Otherwise, you're living in a 2,000 square foot condo, okay? But you're not eating, right? This helps you break out where the percentages need to go. And again, you hide and watch the food and the entertainment, okay? College students, young people, that's usually way out of whack, all right? We're moving. That brings me to Form 4, Budget Analysis. Again, these are just helpful sheets. I hope you all will use these in your budget. Here's what I want you to do. Third assignment. If you're not doing this, this is just send up some file somewhere. We'll forget about it. Let's have that little come to Jesus meeting. How many of you all don't have a budget at all and you've never done one? It's okay. Come on. Let me see you. All right? No crime, no shame. You got to start somewhere. I want you all, as you're doing this, you sit down and you try to figure out for the last month what you spent in these areas. Okay? Hopefully you're keeping records. Please keep records. Keep receipts. Okay? I hope you're balancing your checkbook and your checking accounts. Don't just expect the bank will let you know. Okay? Don't get overdraft protection. Okay? That's just laziness. Okay? If you don't know how to do it, have your parents show you. All right? But figure out how much you spent in these areas over the last month. Do this budget guideline based on the percentages that are given to you. And then figure out the difference. Some of you are going to be shocked by how out of whack some of these categories are. Now, set up your new monthly budget. All right? Reallocate those funds. Refunnel that money to different places, again, to reflect a wise, sound budget. You understand what I'm saying? Even if you've never done this before, you can still go back over the last month, see what you've spent, and you can do it. Okay? You can do it. It'll take you probably a couple hours to figure this out in the calculator, but you know what? You can do it. I want to tell you about a great way to start out. If you've never done this before, maybe you're brand new, newlywed, maybe you're just a single guy, trying to make his way, no one knows how, right? What do? I want to recommend the envelope system. Just try it and true, okay? The envelope system is, you've got those categories, housing, food, entertainment, your debt, car, and you do your budget, and you figure out how much monthly, amounts you go in each category. How much you have to have based on your budget for rent. How much you have to have to keep your car running. Okay? And then you get your paycheck wherever you work, you get that thing cashed. Open up a checking account somewhere, get that check cashed, you get it in denominations of bills that you can work with. And then you physically put that amount of cash that you need for your housing, that physical amount of cash for your car, for your food, based on these percentages that you've already worked out. Then over the next month, every time you go eat, you take that envelope with you. Every time you go to the grocery store, and you just lay out the money to buy your food. Now what happens when you run out of money in that envelope? What happens? You starve for the next 3 weeks, and you blew it all the first week in a month. In those kind of situations, at first you might hit a bar from another envelope. But understand, there's a stopping point. You can't keep on borrowing from all the envelopes. After a while, there's no more money. What that does is that teaches you, especially when you're starting out, that idea that once the money is gone, the money is gone. That teaches you the discipline of living in a budget. There's something about physically seeing that money leave your hand. It just does something to you. That's why, I have a debit card that I use. I don't carry cash that often. That's why credit cards, debit cards are extremely dangerous. Because there's not that feeling when you swipe. It's all numbers, it's electronic, you don't see it, you don't feel it, it's not a greenback. Okay? I'm going to challenge you when starting out, get it in cash and work with cash. Try to do that for the first year or so. And learn the discipline up front of living within your budgetary guidelines. And then, as your finances become more complicated, you get married, whatever, then you can go more towards using records. You're still doing the same thing, but it's not actually the cash. You see what I'm saying? It's a tremendous way to learn. And as you get older, and you're not doing cash anymore, you can still do the envelope system, but you're just doing it on paper. So you have your envelopes, but inside you've got a ledger, And you got that money allocated, and when the money is at zero, you stop. But you're using your debit card instead. Okay? That'll teach you this. You're not going to learn it any other way. Okay, one more thing we're going to talk a little bit. Let you guys talk. Some of you all have student loans, right? You got debt. I give guys a slap a kiss of debt. But some of y'all don't even, you don't even know how much you owe, whom you owe to, when you're supposed to pay it, what your payments are. That's somewhere at your parents' house. You haven't even thought about it. You take some time this spring and you write down everything you owe to anybody. Who they are, how to get a hold of them, you know, when is it paid off, how many payments you have to make, how much they are, and you get this all on one piece of paper. Credit card debt, car payment, whatever you got to owe. University of Oklahoma, your loan company for your school loans, you get it all here on one piece of paper, and this is what you do. You put it on your desk, you put it somewhere prominent. Now, granted, not out there on the outside of your door so I can walk by and see your whole financial situation, okay? But you put it somewhere where all your, you know, where you can see it every day. And you just let that be one of the things you see every day. It's a tremendous reminder, okay, that you are in bondage to these people. And you do not have the freedom to go overseas as a journeyman. You don't have the freedom to go live overseas and do whatever God's calling you to do. Go here, go there, until these people are paid. There are some people that are kind of peripherally connected with our ministry at OU that are telling the students, whether you got school debt or not, you go overseas and get out of college, and you trust God that He will pay that debt off. They are good people, but they are good and wrong. Okay? It is extremely bad stewardship to have a lot of money that you owe, and you just think, that's just going to be on hold over here. I'm going to go overseas for a while and deliver God's message to the nations. Okay? I think it's much more godly, more biblical, and more mature. Be a man of your word. You go get a job at college. You go work. You go work hard. You sacrifice. Pay that debt off. And then you go. How is that a blessing? Give me some reasons why. Do it that way. Yeah, you know, that's not looming over your shoulder the whole time you're in China, is it? You know? You can minister with a whole heart. What else?
You're doing interest while you're over there.
That's right. That's right. Just because you deferred the payment, guess what? Yeah, they're still charging you interest. What else? What? They need their money too? That's right. You made a contract with them. You'd be good for your debt. What else?
It's hard work.
You know what? God might very well want to teach you some things in that job for 3 or 4 years to pay that debt off. Now when you go overseas, whatever God's told you to do, how much more is that going to need you? How much more special, you know, how has God fleshed that vision out? How has it worked itself out in your life? What about the fruit of the Spirit of perseverance that comes from working towards a goal? Okay? So you miss out on all that. You just jump and go. And that sounds really spiritual. But you know what? I really think that maybe God wants to show you some things before you go. Okay? Something to think about. I know there's differences of opinion, but you're in bondage, guys. And the International Mission Board will not send you overseas as a journeyman or as a career missionary that you have, I think, more than, what, $6,000 or $8,000 worth of debt. They won't send you. You're at risk. Is it? Let's talk a little bit. What questions do you have? Comments? What things would work for you? Yes?
I've heard this story one day about this guy who's counseling a couple who had money problems.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave him all the finances to pull and everything that was going on with money remains and everything. He looked over the thing, he came back and said he had a solution. And when he did, he told the wife to quit a job. Mm-hmm. Now we'll fix her money problems. Mm-hmm. Because of the daycare, the extra car, the extra expenses actually makes it cost money for the work.
Mm-hmm.
And so she saved more money than she got paid for.
That's right.
By quitting her job.
That's right.
I think he figured out she was paying like 50 cents an hour to work.
That's right.
So something like that. I don't know the exact number.
That's right. That's a true story. She was basically working to keep her kids in daycare so she could work. That's probably math right there. What else?
So like you live off this like one income.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do if the other one, like, she's going to work before you have kids or something?
Man, okay, that's tremendous. Okay? Before you have kids, and she can work a while, use her degree. Again, we're not talking about being barefoot and pregnant and all that kind of stuff all the time. But she can work, you can have a surplus. Okay? Maybe God want to use that to, you know, to buy a car outright when you need to replace transportation, to buy a home. Maybe God wants to use that to help invest for your future. and absolutely support the industry. But see, what happens is we want to raise our standard of living for that extra income. And we get hooked on that. Then kids come, we can't lower it. So if you discipline yourself right now to live on that one, you have a lot of freedom with that extra income. You really do. You have a lot of opportunities there. Yes, ma'am.
Is it okay to buy like a used car with payments?
Well, again, you need to figure out, you know, what kind of interest are you paying? You're much, you know, Max always told me, you know, all my maximums, but the cheapest car to drive is the one you own. You know, if it runs, drive it. Okay, maybe it doesn't look that good and smell that good. It runs, and you drive, and I would challenge you first, Aaron, to save so you can buy that right before you have to finance. Anytime you finance, you're in bondage. Okay? And you're making a contract that I'm going to be good for this money over the life of this loan. What if you get sick? What if you can't work? You know what they're going to come and get? That car you bought. Okay? So if you can discipline yourself to save a few extra months instead of having to go into debt and finance, you're free. Anybody else? Questions? Comments? Neil? Yeah, I know you've dealt with this one out in California. It's different out there. It's housing so expensive. You've had to raise support. What kind of, you know, things have you seen? How's God provided? What are some wise tips? Just keep going.
I think what you're saying is right on. I think the percentages are going to be a little different out there as far as housing and stuff like that because it's just more expensive. But, you know, the principles are the same. And I think that, like what Travis was talking about, we've encouraged folks to learn to do that. Like we have a couple that graduated and, well, it's more expensive, like, to go to the University of Central California. It's about $40,000 a year. So it's, they were having to try to figure out this stuff. So once they graduated, and they both got jobs as engineers, where a lot of other folks were taking 10, 12, 20 years to pay off their student loans, they took all of her income and applied it to debt. And they lived off of his, and so like in 2.5 years, they were totally out of debt. And then they've been able to do very, very well. But I think the other thing is like, I think where the disconnect comes in is people don't see it as part of ministry.
Right.
And I think Luke 16:11, where it says, if you're not faithful and unrighteous men, who's going to give you true riches?
Sure.
So I think if you're not really handling your money right, you've got to let you work with people.
Sure.
And not that effective ministry. There's a direct tie-in to your effectiveness in ministry and the way you handle your money.
Absolutely. I think that's why Jesus talked about it so much. And so many of the parables and word pictures had to deal with money. Okay? People would not change at all the time. Okay? Tremendous. Any other questions? It's going to be the hardest thing is getting started and then keeping going. You know, you got guys that check you on the verses. I know some of you particularly you have accountability to go share the gospel every week. Why not have a budget accountability partner? Why not have someone to keep you accountable on your finances, how you're spending your money, and ask you the tough questions? Okay? You can do it. All right? Take some work. I'm telling you, the freedom you have. Alright? And remember, there's some great resources out there about the idea of living in a margin. Okay? You want to keep a margin in your life. See, when you live on 100% of your income, the first crisis or something that happens, you break. You can't take it. So the idea of developing a surplus, maybe like you and Ethan can do, Travis, you can set aside a portion of your money for investments. Ron Blue talks about how you want to start out slow. Let's say your income is $2,000 a month. What is 1 week's income? $500, right? You want to build it to the point where you have $500 of income in the bank as a surplus. This is not spoken for money. This is not investment money. This is a surplus. Because you just never know. Things happen. Since you want to grow that to a month income, then 3 months, then 6 months of surplus. Okay? That gives you a margin. And then that gives you the ability to do some really neat investing things, and giving things. Now you've got those margins, you've got those buffers, so when things happen, and you know, you're not sliding things down on your credit card. Tremendous opportunity. Living in a surplus. But man, understand compound interest. And talk to our CPA friend back here if you have to. I'm telling you what, start investing now. Don't sacrifice that to pay off debt. You can do both. You can just, all right? It's high noon. Let me pray for you. If you have any questions, talk to Neil, talk to Max, he really knows his stuff. I'd be happy to help you any way I can. Father in heaven, thank you for this group and for their attentiveness. Lord, there's just so many details and numbers, and we have a whole other vocabulary we use with finances. What I really appreciate about Ray, I meant to say in the last workshop, that it's not rocket science. If you take the time to study, to ask questions, you can be effective in managing your money. Well, I just pray that over each and every one of us, that we would glorify you, that we could stand before you, and you would say, well done, good and faithful servant, enter into the joy of your master. Because we've honored you with the little things, we've honored you with our finances, with our resources, that we could be maximized and effective in reaching the nations with the gospel. That our marriages wouldn't have the strain of financial stress. That our children could raise and grow up in a home where mom and dad are there. Not raised by somebody from daycare miles away. Oh God, I pray that we would have the courage to look different than our culture and to stand against the seduction of the media and a lifestyle that says, I want what I want when I want it. I pray this in the name of Jesus. Help us, Lord, to be disciplined. Amen. 50 years from now, someone's going to check out this tape from the BSU and they're going to be listening to you guys in the background. Isn't that encouraging? All right. Hello, everybody. We're going to talk about finances. We've got about 45, 50 minutes. And as usual, there's a whole lot of ground to cover and not much time. So if you'll bear with me, we're going to talk through some things, give you guys an opportunity to share some things. Someone look up 1 Chronicles 12:32 and read that for us, please. 1 Chronicles 12:32, talking about how to manage your money wisely.
Men of Issachar, who understood the times and knew what Israel should do, 200 chiefs with all the relatives under their command.
Okay. You think, what in the world does that have to do with finances? That's a great question, one I would ask myself. These are talking about just the men who are gathering around King David and the mighty men that supported him. And the sons of Issachar, that wonderful phrase, they understood the times. These men were not uninformed. They understood the lay of the land. They knew the system. And they had basically wisdom, and they had an ability to discern and make decisions and to live in such a way that they were relevant. They had an impact. Okay, they were not always playing catch-up. And guys, I think the church needs to be like the sons of Issachar, particularly in the area of finances. The old saying is true. I've seen it with my own eyes. The two worst professions in the area of managing money are doctors and pastors. Did you know that? It's interesting. Probably no two other professions handle more money, if you think about it. Doctors, if they have a successful practice, can literally see millions of dollars come through their practice. You can have even the smallest dinky Baptist church in California or Oklahoma, and they can have hundreds of thousands of dollars every year going through their budget. I'm talking a church of 30 or 40 people. Okay? And you've got some schmo who doesn't know beans about finances trying to manage that money for the church. Then we look out in the pew, you've got people in debt, leasing cars, which is the biggest mistake you could ever make, buying houses upon houses and new clothes and have 5 credit cards and they're all maxed out. And you know what's going to happen is the enemy will just be more than happy to facilitate that type of lifestyle. Because he knows that you will be in absolute bondage because of your debt, because of your poor financial management. And then that's going to remove you from the Great Commission. Okay? Yes, you might be able to share the gospel at work, but you're not going to be able to give to your church. You're not going to be able to support ministries overseas, support campus ministries like BSU, and maybe needy staff members who raise their support. But you know that idea of being able to give and support ministry, you're not able to do that. And I would even go so far to say that when the stress comes and the pressure comes because your finances are in complete shambles, you will not be able to personally share the gospel and make disciples either. You know why? Because your marriage will be on the rocks. There'll be so much tension in your home that it's going to be extremely difficult to have fellowship and meaningful relationship with God. You're going to be so distracted by all this money stuff, and there's so much pressure, you're not going to be able to really cultivate relationships on the job, wherever you are, for the purpose of the gospel, making disciples. Because the one thing on your mind is getting that next bill paid and keeping your head above water. So guys, Managing your money in America 2004, honestly, can affect everything in your ministry. It really can. We're going to talk about that a little bit. We got a handout here, and I want to try to give you guys things that you don't normally get. A lot of times we talk about these workshops and finances, you get the same handouts every time. So I wanted to mix it up a little bit. I'm going to give you some principles very quickly, work through this, and then we're going to talk about some very practical things that we can do. Number one, you need to always live on less than you make. You think, well, that's a no-brainer. Well, you'd be surprised. People are constantly living and trying to embrace a lifestyle that's beyond what they make. For whatever reason, maybe for their own selfishness, maybe they're trying to impress their friends, their co-workers, but commit right now, today, right this minute, to always live on less than you make. If you cannot do that right now, then you need to take some serious looks at your finances, how you're spending your money, how you're budgeting. You've got to learn to live on less than you make. Okay? If you can't start there, you'll never manage your money wisely. Secondly, you've got to set financial priorities. That is paramount, that you set financial priorities. You know the old saying, if you fail to plan, you what? You plan to fail. And you will fail. Your finances just won't happen. They just won't happen to fall into place that honor God and are biblical and will free you and give you liberation to minister effectively. That's just not going to happen by accident. You've got to make a plan. Number three, get a handle on your debt. Some of you all have school debt. Okay? That's not in and of itself evil or bad, but it is difficult. And with school debt, you can be limited for the first several years after you get out of college. Okay? So we need to talk about how to get a handle on your debt. Then there's consumer debt. Consumer debt would be credit cards. Some of you all have a real problem with credit cards. Okay? They own you. I'm telling you what, again, you've got to get a handle on that. We'll talk about how to do that. Become a smart shopper. Some of you guys, particularly guys, you do a horrible job when you shop. You just go into the grocery store and you just buy the first thing that you see. You need milk, so you buy, you know, the free-range, you know, cattle milk that's, you know, put in these golden urns and then sold at Homeland, you know, for $10 a gallon. You know, you can buy cheaply with food when you cook. Some of you ladies, you're not above this either, okay? When you shop, be a smart shopper. Coupons, sales, now that takes a little work. It takes a little planning, but you can save literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars every year by being a smart shopper. Okay? Discipline. Okay? Prepare for the future. Plan ahead. Be disciplined. Guys, it's no different than having a quiet time, memorizing or reviewing verses, committing to sharing the gospel, praying and interceding for your friends and loved ones. That's hard work. That doesn't come naturally. Neither does managing your money. And most importantly, always, always seek God's leadership in every area of your finances. Again, Christians, we talk about all these things, this ministry, the kingdom of God, walking with God, and then our finances are over here, off to the side. And we don't even give it a second thought to lay those before the Lord, to pray. Even before you buy even a pack of gum, I challenge you guys, just to pray and ask the Lord, is this something you want me to do? Is that extreme? Well, it might be. If you have a real problem spending money unwisely, start there and ask the Lord before you buy things if this is something you need to have right now. Or is there another way that He might choose to provide this for you instead of going into debt? You see that with cars from time to time? People in our ministry need an automobile, and they could go out and borrow and go into debt and buy a car. Could you? But, you know, maybe God wants you to wait on Him, and He wants to show you His provision. And we've seen this where people commit to pray, and then God provides in a phenomenal way. Either a car is given, or some money comes available to buy a car debt-free. But see, by you jumping the gun, going into debt, buying something because you want it now, what have you just done? What have you just done? Okay, you've gone into debt, but what have you just done? You've not trusted God. And you've missed a tremendous opportunity to see His faithful provision. Or maybe God wants to say no. Maybe He says, I don't want you to have that. But you go out and go into debt and buy it anyway. What have you just done? Okay? Think about that. All right. Next handout there is just the idea of living well on only one income. We won't talk about that, but I want to challenge you.
I know that you all are getting close to the marrying age. You can start having children. I'm going to challenge you to work your finances and live in such a way that, the husband can work and ladies, you can stay home, if at all possible, and raise your children. I'm not saying that you don't ever have a job, that I'm not saying barefoot and pregnant is the way to be. My wife has a master's degree. She is a professional and could make a lot more money than I could if she chose to, in a heartbeat. All right? But if you have children in your home, don't you dare raise your children in daycare. So mom and dad can both work to support a lifestyle that's above your needs. That's usually why in America two parents work. It's to support a selfish lifestyle. You know who misses out? Children. Some of you all are daycare kids. Okay? Tell you what. That is a stench in the nostrils of gush. All right. Brass tacks. That was a whole introduction, by the way. What does the Bible have to say about debt? Well, I hate to say it, it's not positive. Okay, somebody look up quickly, Romans 13:8. And somebody else, Proverbs 22:7. Romans 13:8 and Proverbs 22:7. Go ahead, read.
Proverbs 22:7. And the rich rules over the poor, and the borrower becomes the lender's slave.
The borrower becomes the lender's slave. So let me read Romans 13:8.
Owe no one anything except to love one another, for he who loves another has fulfilled the law.
Owe nothing to anyone. Now sometimes that verse is misinterpreted to say you can never, ever, ever go into debt. Okay? And if you go back and you can study these scriptures, there is never a strict, explicit scripture or passage that forbids debt. Okay? There's no way you're going to be able to buy a house without going into debt. Unless you are Bill Gates or, you know, the guy that invented, you know, Starbucks coffee. That's just not going to happen. Okay? But the idea is this. The Bible never, ever talks about debt in a positive light. Okay? Going into debt for your education is not an evil or sinful thing. But understand Proverbs 22:7. Because you have that school debt, you are in bondage. You are, the word says, a slave to the lender. Which means that until that debt's paid, you're theirs. You don't have the freedom to go overseas. You don't have the freedom to drop everything and do this or that. You have got to pay off that debt. That is a contract. You've given your word. Pay your debts. So again, debt is not explicitly forbidden, but understand the ramifications of debt. And debt will limit you until it's paid off. Okay? We're going to talk more about debt in a minute. Let's talk a little bit about buying houses, cars, investing. Then we'll talk about debt. And then on the back end of it, we're going to talk about some budgeting things and giving. Okay? Buying cars. Some of you I know well, some of you I don't. Okay, I'm not trying to be offensive, I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings, but I just want to pretty much call it like I see it. Don't you ever buy a brand new car. Okay? Maybe your family does, maybe everybody you know does, but if you want to make an unwise financial decision, you go out and buy a brand new car. Because the minute you drive that car off the lot, if you drive around the block, you know what you know how much that car is depreciated on the average? You mean you drive it off the lot? Minimum $1,500. Sometimes as high as $3,000 to $4,000. That's what the dealer made off of you. Why not wait and buy a car a year, 2, 5, 10, 15 years old? And you can save a lot of money. Somebody else has worked the bugs out. Somebody else has worked the kinks out. It's broken for you. And you can save literally thousands of dollars by buying these cars. It's a major, major mistake to finance a brand new car. Do not go into debt for a car. You understand me? Don't do that. That's crazy. Save. If you want to buy a car, start looking. Look online. Check Auto Trader. Talk around. Look around. Find something you want. Pray about it. Here's a great opportunity to see God's faithful provision. Make a list of what you need. What you need. Yeah, and throw in some things you want. Okay? It doesn't have to be a Model T, you know? ask God, you know, here's what I want. And you come in to go before Him and pray. We did that with Jim's car. Her old car, she had an 89 Beretta. And this thing was breaking down every other week. It was costing more to keep it running than it was to even own the darn thing. Okay? I sold it for $1,700. I couldn't believe it. I told the guy everything that was wrong with it. He paid me cash money. I said, all right, God bless you. The radio worked. And so we need to get her car. Well, we had a little money. I think we had $5,200 we had saved to buy a car. We made a commitment. We will never, ever buy a brand new automobile. Okay? That's crazy. So with $5,200, you know, you can buy a decent automobile, but you can't go out and buy a Cadillac or a Mercedes with that. So over the course of about 4 weeks, we looked at every one ad in the state of Oklahoma, I think. We called, seriously, we called everywhere. We drove up to Maya, Oklahoma, Grove, Oklahoma City, Norman, Tulsa, Sepulpa. We were looking everywhere. You know, my head was on a swivel driving down the road. You know, just looking for cars parked there, you know, at the for sale sign. It was hard work. But we made a list of what we needed, what we felt like was just the bare minimum, maybe a couple things that we wanted. Need something reliable, something that would be good for Jen, possibly a family, which is size someday, something that we could use for ministry. It's comfortable, looked nice, had air conditioning, that was big for her. And so we looked and looked. I'll be honest with you. After about 3 or 4 weeks, we were getting really discouraged because we weren't finding anything. And I hate to say it, but Jen's getting a little upset with me because we saw a car that she really wanted and I just didn't have a piece of that. And later that same day, it was nighttime, and we were driving back to Norman, and we drive by this guy's car lot out on the B-line out by Bixby, Oklahoma. He had 5 cars on his lot, and one of them was her 94 Saturn that we bought. And we paid $5,226 for that car. And we've had it since 1999. It's been phenomenal for us. It's got power everything. It's the top-of-line Saturn, has a moon roof. It's crimson, which, you know, fits with the OU motif. It's been tremendous transportation for us. And Jen had always wanted a Saturn. That was one of those things that she had always wanted, was a Saturn. And God provided that. Okay? But you see, usually when God provides something like a car, it's usually like this. It is His faithfulness to provide and open doors, and our faithfulness to work hard, save, and be diligent. Okay? We would not have been able to buy that car if we didn't make some wise decisions with our money and investing and making commitments to not go into debt. Okay? At the same time, honestly, with a pure heart, I mean, you and I know, God showed us where that car was. But He waited 4 weeks for us to pursue Him, to work hard, to wear out the shoe leather before we could buy it. Okay? I think it's the way God usually likes to provide. He wants us to pay a price when He provides. Okay? Something to think about. Never, ever, ever buy a new car. If you finance a new car, you made a major mistake. Because you will basically pay probably an extra, a minimum of five, maybe as high as $10,000 or $15,000 after you got to buy that car, if you finance it over 5 years. Some people finance cars for 7 years. Okay? Sometimes you'll pay for that car twice when you finance it. That's crazy. Okay? Houses. Same thing goes here with houses. I know some of y'all are a few years away from that. Never, ever, ever get a 30-year note. That's a mortgage. Okay? Mortgage is, you make a contract with the bank, you have the money to buy a $100,000 home in cash. Okay? Something like a car, you can just save up and buy it outright. So you go and you have good credit, and you make a contract with them, they loan you $100,000 to buy this home. And they said, okay, you have, ideally, they want you to take 30 years to pay that note off. Maybe, $600 a month for 30 years. Okay? I didn't bring a calculator with me. We don't really have the time to touch numbers. Do you know how much you will pay on the average on a 30-year note for a $100,000 house? Anybody know? $300,000. $300,000 on a 30-year note. They want you to have a 30-year note, don't you? Okay? That's what happens with interest. And guess what? They don't tell you this, but you figure it out after a while. When you take a contract with a car, your student loans, a house, you know when you pay the interest? Up front. So you're paying $600 a month for your house payment? Probably the first 10 years, probably well over $500 is going just to the interest. You don't start paying the principal till the end. Why do they do that? They want their money up front. Okay? So, if you get a 20-year note, you can knock off $100,000 off that house on a 20-year note. Now, you're going to pay more a month, but you save $100,000. Okay? That takes discipline. You need to think that through. Any kind of loan, any kind of debt that you have, you can turn the page over there and see this. Always pay more than the minimum payment. If your house payment is $600 a month, you pay $600, and then I would recommend on a separate check, if you can, you have to budget for this, pay an extra $100 and write principal on the check. See, what they do is, by law, they have to apply that to the principal of the note. Now, that, you know what you've done? If you get an amortization, you know what an amortization is? That's a list of all your payments over the life of the loan. So if it's a 30-year note, every month for 30 years, you have the payment, how much goes to the principal, and how much goes to the interest. And they give you a copy of that so you can see, here's what you're doing. Well, when you pay an extra $50 or $100 a month on principal, that goes to the back, and that'll knock off an entire payment. You understand what I'm saying? So an extra $100 on the principal up front can knock off a whole payment on the back side of the note. You pay $100 principal, and you will save a $600 payment. See what I'm saying? Understand how that works? Because that interest is not applied into your note, and your note shortens up.
Do banks ever break that law?
No, I don't think they. I don't think they do. Okay. I mean, my best friend is a banker, and I know there's some really strict rules about that. But as long as you designate that as a principal, they're supposed to apply that to principal in the note. That's right.
In some cases, depending on what loan you get into, that can be, you can get a prepayment from the chaos. But a lot of times it depends on the loan. And if you ask just a simple interest only loan, it would require a loan for that. But make sure you ask the questions.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right. Yes.
What about saving up for a down payment?
Usually conventional, I think, is 20%. For a home, you need to really work on a down payment. Because if you don't have a down payment, you're going to put you at a higher interest rate on your loan. So instead of maybe getting a 5% loan, they'll give you 6% for no down payment. Alright?
Yeah, until you get up the money, you just live in an apartment, would be the best thing? Or
that, or, you know, sometimes it just depends. I know people that will talk to parents if that's available, and they can make a contract with their family and borrow against their parents. And it's much easier and cheaper to borrow from your parents and pay them back with interest at a lower level than what you'd give the bank. Okay? But explore some of those options. Okay? Anytime you deal with family money, I know sometimes it's a little awkward. But if there's any possible way, you can go conventional on your loan and not have to take the higher interest rate. Again, you save thousands on thousands of dollars for the life of that loan. Okay? Yes, sir.
The one thing on that, too, if you're under 20%, you have to pay insurance.
That's right, mortgage
insurance. Because and basically what it is that, that you, the bank would put you at a higher risk, mm-hmm. so they insure that home. So you pay insurance on top of
it. Right.
So if you pay at least 20% or more, then you don't have to pay that insurance.
And that could be as high as, you know, $30, $50, $60 a month, just because you're a risk. Well, imagine, and that's until what? Until you get your equity right, then that goes off.
Yeah.
Okay? So that could be, what, maybe about 5 or 6, 7 years in the first part of the note. So you figure, let's just say $30 a month. Okay? How much is that a year? 360. I times that by 7 years. Okay? That's just because you're a risk to me. Okay? So if there's any way you can go conventional, you can save that money. Keep that in your pocket. Or use it to pay off your house that much quicker. Okay? Ask the questions. All right? Just some simple things to think about. We keep on moving here. If we're talking about investing a little bit, I know I'm hopping around a little bit, but I want to make sure I cover some of these areas because we don't want to have time. Even though you guys are in debt, I want to challenge you all to start investing now. I know there's two schools of thought about this. I know people that say when you're in debt, you put every single penny of your disposable income and getting out of debt first. I would say that's a mistake, and here's why. The one commodity that you all have right now is time. You have time. Okay? Max doesn't have the time that you have. Okay? So even though you might have some pretty hefty school loans, if you can put back even just a little bit of money every month, put towards investment, if you understand the value of compound interest, see, compound interest can either bite you or bless you. It will bite you with your credit cards. Okay? It can bite you with your mortgage, but it can bless you when you invest. Okay? You get this page here that says the time value of money. Can you see that? Guys, this is not fuzzy math. Okay? I'm telling you, this is true. Let me tell you about something. It's called a Roth IRA. Praise God for George Bush, because he raised it up to $3,000 a year now that you can give to a Roth IRA. It used to be only $2,000. Okay? It's a tax sheltered IRA that you basically you pay your taxes up front, so you have to pay taxes on the back end of the investment. Here's what this might look like. You're age 21. Okay? Let's say you had the capability. Some of you all, this is no way. I know you might think there's, I don't even have anywhere close to this. Let's say you have $2,000 that you could put in at the age of 21 to a Roth IRA. Let's say you could do that every year until you're at the age of 27. Okay? How much do you have invested in your Roth IRA by the time you're 27? It's there at the bottom of the page. 14 grand. Okay? That's some good money. You know what, guys? If all you do is put in that 14,000 from the ages of 21 to 27, when you turn 65, your corpus or your overall investment is $1.6 million. $1.6 million. The power of compound interest. Now, you take the guy that maybe he's just didn't get his head in the game, he was unwise, whatever reason, he was unable to start investing until he was the age of 28. And he put $2,000 a year, every year, faithfully, until he turned 65. At a normal 12% interest, at the age of 65, he has $1.3 million. He invested $76,000. He got 1.3. You invested 14,000. You got 1.6. What's the only difference here? Time. Okay? Understand the value of time. And guys, that's why I highly recommend talk to your parents. If you need any help, talk to me or talk to Max. We can get you talking to the right people. If there's any way to start investing there, even just a few dollars a month, I'm telling you, compound interest can really bless you. Years to come.
All right? Yes, Paul. Is the Roth the best IRA?
I think so because of the tax.
That's free.
Yes. Okay. Basically, you're paying your tax up front. Right. Would you rather pay tax on $14,000 or tax on $1.6 million? Yeah. You'd rather pay on $14,000. That's what a Roth does. Okay. You're protected. Most of your other investment programs, like with 401ks, when you pay your taxes, right?
After
you take it out. Okay? Hey, buddy, you're paying a lot of taxes. That's why your grandparents were right. Okay? All right? Seriously. Because they probably invested wisely, a lot of them, and they're getting killed on their taxes. So look for the tax sheltered ones.
So companies that offer 401k options don't go with that?
Well, ideally, you want to have, they say, a mixture of both. Okay? Do a Roth IRA. Okay, and do a 401k as well.
Yeah, some companies match.
That's right. Okay, and ideally you want to diversify and have different investments. Okay, that's wise. Okay. But for those of you in college right now, you know, you could start up on a Roth IRA right now. I think the minimum is 500 a year. Is that right? Is it a little higher?
Yeah.
500 a year. A lot of you guys can come up with $500 a year. And when you're married, you and your spouse can both put up to $3,000 a year. Can you imagine the power of that compounded? All right.
You have to invest $500 a year when you have it, or for a certain number, like this?
No, I mean you could. The minimum is you have to put this much in
at the beginning. Or?
I mean, you can only just do it for 1 year if you want. Okay. But you have to put into it has to be a minimum of $500,
right,
maximum $3,000.
Okay.
Understand? Guys, this is tremendous. Please, please, please hear me. Don't miss out on that.
These are really easy things to do. Just walk into the local bank and ask them about it, and you can actually put it right here.
Yeah, that's right.
You don't have to get in contact with a financial consultant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no middleman anymore. There used to be. You go for, you know, financial consultant or
broker. You don't have to do that. Okay? So, guys, this is a tremendous way to start investing for your future. Okay? And not just so that, you know, there's security, you can have what you want. The idea is, this guy with $1.6 million when he turns 65, he retires. Now, what can he do? Maybe he was an engineer. Maybe he was a city dog catcher. What can he do now? He can go overseas on missions trips. He has tremendous power to bless his church, to involve his family in the Lord's work. Guys, that's what we're living towards. Not for ourselves. It's not so we have bigger homes and bigger cars. The idea is that you have a freedom and opportunity to be a part of God's global mission. Okay? Any questions at this point? Yes, sir.
So would it be better to go to a bank rather than your normal Schwab, Witter, Stanley broker?
Well, a lot of those brokers will charge you.
Sorry. And banks then?
No, it just depends. I don't know.
You don't want to look at it because they're going to offer different rates.
Right.
Well. Okay. So maybe Schwab might charge you, but they'll be better.
Right. Shop around. Think like mortgages. You always shop around. Don't go in the first one. And compare.
One of the things that best rates is that credit unions. Or even the Washington Trust.
Hopefully, some of y'all's parents are thinking ahead. Maybe got you in a credit union. You got out of their work when you were just a baby or a child. Never close that account. Because you normally get better rates from credit unions. So even if it's only $50 in that account, just keep it open. Okay? If you need to buy a home, or you have to go into debt, you can borrow a lot better from a credit union than a normal bank. Okay. I think I'm in two or three credit unions. Teachers Credit Union, the old McDonnell Douglas Credit Union, you know, and that's okay. We'll just leave those accounts open. I think it's $25 in one and $76 in the other. Okay? Yes, sir.
Aren't there some restrictions on the accessibility of an IRA?
Yes. There are penalties, okay? You cannot, well, I guess you could, withdraw early, but then all the taxes are levied, aren't they? So it is protected as long as you meet the requirements. But maybe you're 45 and you want to pull out of your IRA, you're going to take a real hit. A major hit. Yes, sir.
So can you put a limit on when you can take it out, or is it automatically 65?
I believe it's 65 for Roth IRAs. I don't think there's any other. But there are other types of investments. Like they have 5-year, 10-year, 20-year, like CDs, those type of things you can buy. But understand if it's only a 5-year CD, you have a much lower rate of return than a 20-year CD. Okay. Any other questions? I know this stuff gets confusing. Okay. But I hate to say it, but a lot of y'all got the worst modeling and information from your parents. Some of y'all, your parents live in debt. My father has never met a new car he didn't like. Okay, I mean, some people have hobbies. You know, they like to work, you know, with wood. Some people like to paint. You know what my father's hobby is? Automobiles. I'm not lying. On the bulletin board in our records room, my home back in Sepulveda, he's got 3 pages, single spaced, of all the cars he's ever owned, going back to the time he was 16 years old. The make, the model, the engine. He's just a car guy. As a matter of fact. Not anymore, because everybody in Tulsa knows him. But, you know, his idea of fun is just going on a Sunday afternoon to all the car lots and looking at all the cars. And they get all these new car sales, and they think, aha, here's a sale. And so they're always leaving messages on my parents' home phone, hey, we can never help you. After a while, they finally realize, oh, this guy's just a professional shopper. You know, he just always looks at cars. And he has no problem going to debt for a car.
How about exactly?
Yeah, well, buy his Lazy Boy. He has magazine racks about that wide, about that deep. And I'm not lying. If you ever had a question about a new car, you call me, tell me. He's got the official, you know, Chevy or Dodge or Ford, you know, full color brochure flyer about that automobile. He's got anything you want to know about.
There are no magazines.
Yeah, there's no magazines. It's just. All right.
See, is this the information that you get when you go to actually look at the car that the dealer gives you?
Yes, actually. I mean, this is what they have when you, like, along the wall of the dealership. He's got every one of them. Every one of them. I mean, last time I was home, I was reading about Hummers. You know? He has all the Hummer, you know, catalogs. I'm like, you know, I'll never buy a Hummer. But I'm just telling you, see, if that's kind of model you receive, and he was trying to convince Jen and I that we could buy a new car cheaper than a used car last time I was home. I said, well, Dad, you have to finance that? Well, yeah. Well, if I buy a used car outright with cash, how is buying a new car cheaper when I finance it? I didn't think about that. Okay? But that's what some of you guys were raised up. Credit cards, debt. Guys, it's bad news. The time we have left, let's talk about some of these sheets. I want to show you some resources. Now, guys, I know this is a little scattered, but this is a very big, general topic. But I want to recommend to you Larry Burkett. He's got some great workbooks. And this is a Bible study. I want to talk about some of the practical things, but you really don't understand the practical until you understand the principles behind it. You might know that Burkett died recently. Kind of a bad day of cancer. Godly man. But this is a great workbook that maybe you could go through. You could take a group of a group of students through if you want to do a professional study on money with your spouse. Larry Burkett. And then this is the planning workbook. So you have all the sheets in the back for budgeting, investing. It's all here. And then write down a couple other names real quick. Ron Blue, our color. Another tremendous guy. Understands money. He's written some great stuff. Between Burkett and Blue, you have your bases covered. There's a ministry called Crown Ministries. George Boucher is a friend of Max's, and he's involved in this ministry. They'll come into your church, and they will gladly do a whole financial planning weekend. They'll do workshops with people in your church for the purpose of getting out of debt, investing, budgeting. Crown Ministries, they have a website. Just do a Google search, you'll find them. Seriously. Changed his life, didn't it?
Yeah, he was able to build a garage in that garden.
Okay, so that might be something that you could go back to your home church, talk to a pastor, talk to somebody there, and say, let's have these people come in. Okay? And you know, that's a tremendous witnessing and recruiting tool. Lots of people want to know about money, too. Okay? If you offer a financial planning and management workshop at your church, you're deep to bring lots of people in. No problem. Okay. What are these last sheets? The first one, Form 1, is Monthly Income Expenses. This is from Burkett. Some of you guys have never kept a budget. Your budget's right here.
Yeah.
Right? Guys? Ladies? You know what? That'll bite you. Okay, it's just a matter of time. You're going to start forgetting things. Your math isn't going to work out right. You're going to be overdrawn. You're going to be short on money. You're going to have bills to pay. Okay? Set up a budget. Here's one that I gave Michelle's brother Dan. He worked through with me a couple weeks ago. And basically just figure out how much gross income, that's before taxes, you make every month. And then systematically you just work through the different categories. This helps you think. If you're setting up a house, if you're out of college, you got a job, you're in an apartment, you know, maybe you're just married, and you need to know these are the categories you need to be thinking about because you're going to be paying money for these categories. You know, we all think about food, we all think about our car, think about our housing. A lot of times we don't think about, you gotta pay for my insurance. Oh man, I forgot. I gotta buy clothes every now and then. Okay? And see, that doesn't factor into your mind, and then boom, your jeans get a big old hole in the backside, you don't know how to sew, and you don't have the $25 to go out and buy a new pair of jeans. Okay? This budgeting will help you work towards that. So you can reproduce any of this stuff, okay? And help set up a budget. Real quickly, you can see it there. You always tithe your gross, not your net. A friend of mine who's in the world of high finance, for years, had only tithed his net. And it was kind of a running point of issue between me and him. Because if you do your taxes right, you're going to get that money back. Okay, and a large portion of it. Always tithe off your gross. Okay, give the Lord the first fruits. And you know, you tithe in your taxes. Okay? You always figure that out before you do your budget. Okay? And guys, don't ever. You'll be tempted. If going gets tough and money's tight, just keep your tithe for month or two. What'll happen is it'll go from 3, 4, 6, 12 months, 3 or 4 years, and you're not tithing. Okay? Are you willing to trust God, to be disciplined, to work hard, be informed, trust God and give that it's His first? I don't care what your situation is, you better always tithe.
Otherwise, how can you possibly go before the Lord and ask Him to bless your finances? When you're not giving and trusting Him with what's His. Everybody talks about 10%. I know in the New Testament we don't see 10%. I understand in the Old Testament, 10% was the minimal standard of giving. You got, in churches today, 10% is like the King's Ransom. You know, everybody gets all excited if you tithe 10%. That's how far we've come. Okay? That was the minimal standard. The minimal standard. A friend of mine was in charge of finances for a church. He was a finance chairman. He told me, and he said, I've done some studies nationally. The average tithe to a church is 2.5%. 2.5% is the average tithe. We're not even sniffing the minimum. Something to think about, guys. And you want God to honor your finances? There's a budget. We might come back to that. Next page. Variable expenses. Again, you know, housing, rent, you know, food, clothing, some of those things, okay, yeah. But what about those variable expenses? I mean, nobody plans for a flat tire or a new transmission, right? Nobody plans for a cavity, those extra expenses. How do you plan for that? What you do is on this Form 2, on the back part of the page there, you can kind of figure out, well, okay, if, you know, this can cost about $300 to get my teeth fixed. That's your estimated cost, and figure out what do you need to budget per month for that. And Ron Blue really talks about that in his book. So you need to check that stuff out. How you want to develop a surplus, not to spend, not for investing, but for these variable expenses. That you're saving and putting that money away for that when that flat tire comes, you're going to buy a tire, but you're going to go into debt for it. If you're going to go on a vacation, it's going to cost you $300 to go to Mexico. For, you know, a week of fun in the front. All right? Well, you know, when you leave, you know, how much money it's going to cost. Just take some discipline to plan ahead. You start budgeting now, you put aside $50 a month. Try to get that $30. Okay? Guys, this will protect you from those surprises. Because some of you all live from crisis to crisis, don't you, with your finances. You're not prepared. You're not ready. This is a great way to really discipline yourself to do that. You know, one of the questions people ask me, I've got this budget. I don't know how much money to allocate to what. I mean, I don't know how much, what's my percentage for my housing? What should I expect to set aside for my car? And you can look there on the back of, it's a figure 5.1. So you have, this has budget percentage guidelines. Turn the page over. This is from Burkett. This is suggested, okay? But for a typical family of four, he gives, whether you make $15,000 or $60,000, what the basic average percentages should be for each category. Okay? And you're like, well, I don't have a family of four. Okay. This just gives you some numbers to work from. Okay? And you can scale them down if you're still single or if you're a newlywed. Okay? You don't have to put money towards child care or school if you're not married. What you do is you take these percentages, okay, and then you go back to that budget worksheet on the first one we looked at. And you plug those percentages in here, and that's how you break down your money. That's how you know if you make $2,000 a month, what percentage goes to what category. Are you with me? This will be the hardest thing for you all to do. Because you're not going to be disciplined to sit down every month and do this. Okay, I'm going to give you a clue on how that might make it look that a little bit easier. Back in the old days, employers would pay their employees with cash. And they had a system called the envelope system. And it really works. It's just harder now because everything's electronic. But the envelope system, you know, maybe your categories are food, debt, housing, car. Just pull those four out for a minute. So you create an envelope for each one of those. Okay? And you know, you figured your budget, you know, based on a $2,000 a month salary, I can put this percentage of that, I need to do this towards my housing. Okay? And so when you get your money, you cash that check, and you get it into the types of bills that you can navigate and negotiate with, and then you put that much money in your housing envelope. You put that much, you know, the $400 in housing, you put $200 in food, and you put that in each envelope. And then over the course of that month, anytime you spend, you go to that envelope, and you buy food, and you plug the food envelope. And then guess what happens when the food envelope is empty? What happens? You go steal from another envelope? Maybe you might have to first. What that does is that teaches you, especially starting out, the idea that once the money is gone, it's gone. If you budget it and you spend it all, you don't spend any more in that area. Okay? If your clothing budget is $20 a month, and you spend $20 the first day of the month, guess what? You wait till next month to buy any more clothes. What does that teach us? Discipline. For some of you all, that's going to be the hardest thing to learn. It's the discipline of living within your budget. Okay? I would highly recommend doing the envelope system. Well, now everything's electronic, but you can still do it. Still create your envelope, get your percentages off the budget, like I've showed you here, and then you keep a ledger in each envelope for food, housing, clothing, whatever. And when you spend, you immediately go to that ledger, you put that receipt in there for whatever it was, and you write on there. And you keep a tally, and once you come to your $20 or $400, whatever your budget is for that item, you stop. There's just something better about having the cash. Because when you see the cash gone, it's like, it's gone. All right, that's the danger of all these electronic transfers. We're not actually feeling the money. We're not touching it. You know, it's just a debit card or a charge card. It's a lot easier. You will spend more money if all you have is a debit card or a charge card than if you only carry cash. Did you know that? Because there's something about swiping. I didn't see any money change hands. Okay? It just doesn't feel the same. So I want to challenge you guys, if you're just starting out, it's really easy when you're single. Use the envelope system. Okay? And if you can, get your paychecks cash, go to a bank, get an account, they'll cash it for you. Put it in those envelopes and operate out of cash. And do that for a year or two so you can learn the discipline of staying in your budget. Okay? And that can change your life right there. Next page here, Form 4. Basically, if this helps you kind of see. And I want to challenge you guys to do this the first week you get back to California or Oklahoma. You sit down, and if you've ever done it before or not, you write down all the money that you spend in these areas. And then you figure out what you make every month. And you do this budget. Okay, this is your assignment. Okay? Maybe you don't have a budget right now. You just go back to the last month, get all your records. I hope you keep your records. God forbid. And write down what you spent. And then do a budget and see what the difference is. And see if you're out of balance. For college students, the entertainment budget is way up here. Okay? Maybe that needs to come down about 15 notches. Okay? This helps you see where tracking where you're spending your money and what adjustments need to be made. Okay? The last page or two, let's see. This income allocation, like instead of using cash in the envelope system, you could use this. You can make copies of this, put this in your envelope. Do some ledgers and do this. I just really like touching the cash though. And then the last page here is that a lot of you guys are in debt. A lot of y'all don't even know how much you're in debt by. You don't even know what you owe. You don't know how much the payments are. You're just kind of out here floating around in space. Sit down, write down who you owe, their contact name and information, how much you have to pay, when that due date is. Sit down and you get this. You keep this in front of you. And I challenge you, put this on your desk. Put this somewhere you can see it. So every morning, you get to see this. I think it's a great reminder. Okay? Because guess what? You are in bondage and a slave to your limits. So that's paid off. Now, I've listened through this, and I apologize. It's been a little scattered. What questions do we have? Can we talk for a couple minutes? We've got maybe 2 or 3 minutes here. Questions, ideas, thoughts?
I just have a question. Right now, I live with my parents.
Okay.
And I've just been looking at houses because they're considering moving. Mm-hmm. I live in California. Mm-hmm. And even houses in bad neighborhoods sell for $200,000.
Yeah.
So new houses start at least $300,000. Yeah. So I'm just wondering, how can someone like me who's never lived without their parents kind of transition from either like an apartment or a condo or a house?
Yeah, that's the reality of Southern California versus Northern Oklahoma. It is cheaper to rent in California than it is to buy. I know Neil rented his house for like 10, 12 years ago. Was able to buy it. So I don't know, Ray, how do you navigate around that, you know, if you're starting out?
That's always a difficult question. I think right now, as you see, home prices continue to go up. There's more and more people just, you know, for a two-bedroom home. One bath in California, So the real thing, I mean, if you're living with your parents, they let out value, stay with her a few years, take 3-4 years and say, you know, I would pay $1,000 in rent every month, put that aside and save it for some investment account with seniors, and then just keep stocking the rent, save the money.
Yeah, pay yourself. A lot of you guys that live at home and you don't have that house expense, you still go ahead and budget that money, okay? But you can set it aside, put it in some kind of interest-bearing account or something where you can get to it within 3 or 4 years, it's time for you to have housing, okay? Don't just say, all right, that 12.5% of my budget, I can spend on myself. No, 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 be disciplined and set that aside.
And a couple of things that these students come out of college, what they'll do is they'll get roommates. And so you got 3 roommates, your rent's real low, and you go out and buy a really nice car. Or you live with your mom and dad, and you go, because you can afford it. But once you get married, and especially if you have a wife and a kid, it's just you making a difference. And then you really see the reality of what you pay and rent.
That's right.
That's
right.
John Crawford talks about he'd make payments to himself on a car before he had to get one. You can see that working, but how do you start it out? You know what I mean? After you get one, maybe I don't understand exactly how it works, but you need to get your first car.
Right.
I guess you save up.
Yeah, I mean, that's what he's talking about. Your budget, you know, again, this is why you have to look at your budget, okay? And so you budgeted X amount of dollars towards automobile, okay? Well, you've already got a car, okay? Maybe one that someone gave one to you, your parents gave it to you. But keep on driving that thing. The cheapest car to drive is the one you already own, all right? Well, but you go ahead and set that money aside every month, okay? And so basically, you're paying yourself, or making payments to yourself to the point where you can buy a car, okay? And ideally, okay, you set it up to where you keep on, after you bought that car, that newer car, you know, used to you, you know, keep on making those payments to yourself so you can replace it for the next car that's coming along. Okay? Well, what happens is we got a car, you know, I bought it with cash, I don't have to worry about this, so I just take that money out of the budget and I'm spending it over here somewhere. Well, what happens when you blow a head gasket and you need a new car? You have to go to debt to get one, yeah. You've got to have transportation. And Ron Blue really talks about that. That you want to work towards, it's going to be slow, but you want to work towards having a week surplus. Okay, if you make $2,000 a month, figure out what is 1 week's salary. And you work towards a week surplus in the bank. You want to go to a month, and then ideally 3 months, and then 6 months. That's going to take some doing. It's going to take some time and discipline. But now you've got that margin where if something happens, you have to go to debt. And you're still paying yourself, you're still doing your investments, okay, but you want to work on having that surplus. Guys, that surplus, then you can really have the freedom to give and support the industries. Okay? By having a surplus. That's crucial.
Pay yourself before you buy the car.
Yes.
If you buy the car, you get a loan, you pay
after the car. That's right. That's right. Absolutely. Yeah.
A lady once told me the way she saved money was each time she paid off a bill, instead of, you know, keeping, you know, that extra payment, so say for example she paid off a credit card bill, and so she didn't have that $100 credit card payment a month, instead of just keeping that money for whatever, she would still put that money into an account every single month. So that $100, instead of going to a regular bank account, you go into like that, I paid off my bills account. And by the end of a couple of years, she had over $100,000. In the bank, and I was just saving up money based on payment she would have made anyway.
See, she was disciplined, and you understand what she did? She was living on less than she made. She didn't raise her standard of living to absorb that extra $100 now. Okay? She didn't buy new cell phones and, you know, cable modems and, you know, all this and that. But she kept on living at the same level so that she could have a surplus. Some of you guys really want to go overseas, but you can't because of your debt. Alright? I want to challenge you guys. I know you might hear different things. I even know some people kind of peripherally connected with the OU ministry. They might say something like, go ahead and go overseas, God provide the money. I don't think that's biblical. Okay? You're in bondage to the living. If you're in debt, you go ahead and work hard, get disciplined, take 2 or 3 or 5 years, get out of debt, and then you go overseas. So otherwise, you're always looking over your shoulder. I can tell you, the International Mission Board will not send you overseas if you have extreme amounts of debt. I think the limit is like $6,000 or $7,000. If any more than that, they won't send you overseas. Okay? And actually, I didn't even think that's better, because you can get more mature, you get some more training, you can understand what it means to work hard towards a goal. Persevere. So then when you go overseas, it's going to mean a lot more to you than, you know, just roll right out of college and go, you have $20,000 of debt, what can you do? Okay? Any other questions?
Real quickly on the percentages, are these kind of all based off gross?
Yes. Yep. Gross is before tax.
Good. Where?
Figure 5.1.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So you got the net spendable. Okay, you got that. Right there. All right. Thank you guys for coming. You got a couple minutes to go to your next workshop. Hope this is helpful. If you have any questions, talk to me. Max is really, really, really strong in the area of finances. Please bend his ear. He would love to talk to you about it. Thanks a lot.